The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world, stunned Americans may now reflect upon the exultant headlines following former President Nixon's announcement that a peace agreement had been concluded with the communist forces in Vietnam. They said then, years ago, the long war is over. Peace after 12 years, and then we sat glued to our television sets, remember, and we watched all of the POWs come home. We heard about the final great success. Nixon, when he got to the White House, inherited what then was called Johnson's War. And finally, it became Nixon's War to the anti-war protesters. But gradually, that war was wound down. Gradual disengagement, as the Vietnamese troops could take over the battlefield positions from American benefactors, that became the rule of the day. Skillful negotiations finally brought about the release of most POWs, and so finally they said, quote, the long war is over. Those were the headlines. That was the way they talked in the newspapers. And though we were no longer directly involved, the war continued. Now we see the incredible nightmare of human suffering. We hear of the C-5A crash that took the lives of many unfortunate little refugees. We hear of sensational airlifts of Vietnamese orphans and waifs, many of them the children of American servicemen. We hear of the cries abroad of a nation being butchered and ravished and torn asunder, estimates varying from 45% to 75% of the nation gone to the North Vietnamese and the communist enemy. Estimates varying from $1 to $2 billion worth of American equipment given over into the hands of the enemy. We see the headlines of recent days, Americans in Saigon get ready to leave in a hurry. Asia moves to fill vacuum left by United States. Saigon panic possible, U.S. officials caution. Attack on Saigon a virtual certainty. This the city where Americans could visit, where many a person involved in anything from education to religion would make it a point to go to Saigon to talk to at least some of the people about America's living room armchair war, the war we saw fought with our evening meals over television. You could be safely ensconced in a home in Saigon as an American businessman making hundreds of thousands of dollars as a contractor. I talked to such people. I was one of those who also had an opportunity many years ago during the very height of the war and during the Johnson administration to go through Saigon and talk to some of our servicemen. Whether some of those are now alive, I do not know. I do know that over 50,000 American lives were lost in the course of that war and over $140 billion spent. It was by 1973 that Vietnam had become one of the worst nightmares of all of American history. We had then been heavily involved in Vietnam for about 12 years, and the last few years, just before 1973, had shaken our country to its foundations, which in turn shook every other country on earth. Vietnam was a war that dramatically changed the United States of America. It was a curse upon our spirit. It changed us mentally and emotionally. It changed us spiritually. It moved us closer toward virtual civil war that, just as there was no real front in Vietnam, there was no home front in the United States in support of the war in Vietnam, but there became a front in the United States, and it was on America's campuses and in our streets and in our big cities. It changed us mentally, morally, emotionally, and spiritually. It took literally as grievous a toll on the American home front as it did on the Vietnam battlefront. It cost 46,000 lives in combat, another 10,000 lost from other causes, $170 billion. Did I say over 140? That was an absolute understatement. It was finally over $170 billion it cost us, not 140, as I said earlier, so I was again minimizing. Financed by deficit government spending, by the way. And now, as you see articles by economists, you can trace directly back to the roots of the Vietnam deficit spending by government to finance that war as leading directly to this period of stagflation, now is a new word they have coined, which is runaway inflation and stagnation of business at the same time. And this has caused a grievous wound to the economy of the country. Because all that red ink on government ledgers that began to be produced back during the height of the Vietnam War has led directly to the problems of Americans' economy today. It was a war that produced no famous victories that you can really recall. No real national heroes that you remember by name. You don't hum or sing or whistle any patriotic song that you remember from the Vietnam War. You know, millions of us came to absolutely hate that war, just loathe the whole thing. And of course, the entire concept of being involved in other people's battles abroad, even though America would wish that all people could be free, that there would be an absence of war in the world, America finally had to wake up to realize that unless we want to support legions, unless we want to keep troops around the world, we can't garrison the world. Unless we want to rule the world militarily, we cannot force the world to live at peace neighbor with neighbor. Though we might try anything from Kissinger shuttle diplomacy to American bits and dribbles of military and direct aid, though we might sit at home and speculate about the domino theory that if one little country in Southeast Asia falls, all others go with it, and maybe we're seeing the proof of the theory and maybe we're seeing the absence of the proof of the theory, as headlines speculate about Asians moving to fill the vacuum left by the United States. But the point is, America, like Atlas, was trying to shoulder the burden of the entirety of the world, thinking we owe the rest of the world peace, when we really couldn't give the world peace. We weren't able. We didn't have a big enough military machine to enforce peace upon people, because believe it or not, as obscene as that may sound, there are peoples in this world who will not live at peace with each other, except at the point of a gun. Because, you see, racist, tribal and group instincts, religious difficulties and pressures from religion, and we have a lot of us forgotten that it was basically strife between Catholics and Buddhists in the streets of Saigon that led directly toward some of the riots which earlier had unseated a government in that country. Have you remembered all of the scenes about the self-immolation of Buddhist monks protesting? Various clashes between Catholics and Buddhists in Saigon? No, we can't guarantee the rest of the world peace. The agony of what you see happening is the sad part. I wrote a book, a little booklet actually, not very much of a book, called To Kill a People, which I think is ever the more important in the light of what is happening in the world today. But this was written not only from the perspective of the Vietnam War, but in the backdrop of the enormous lessons we failed to learn in the war in Korea. That after all of that agony and the expenditure, the enormous loss of life, all of that type of thing, that we had failed to learn that lesson. I think that booklet may be out of print now. I don't know just how many copies we have available. If we still have a few, I'd be happy to send it to you. If not, and if enough people are interested, I'm sure we could run it in serial form or excerpts from it significant enough that you could read it in the current number of The Plain Truth, which, by the way, has soared to over 3 million with the current issue now in circulation. And many of these things that I am saying, you will read in the current number of The Plain Truth. But we failed to learn the lesson in Korea, and now apparently we are learning the lesson, or are we really, in Vietnam? You look at what is happening, you just scarcely can believe it is true. When we look beyond our borders, almost everywhere we see turmoil and upheaval, setbacks to vital United States interests, an uneasy stirring among our allies, pressure and stirring, rumbles in Europe, the soft underbelly of Europe exposed, America's flank in the Atlantic exposed because of the upheavals in government in Portugal, problems in Turkey, rumblings there because of Turkish anger over United States interference, or the lack of it, either way you wish to say, about the Turkish and Greek Cyprus problems, the collapse of Mr. Kissinger's diplomacy in the Middle East, and the inability of the Israelis and the Arabs to agree together. Wherever you look in the world, things are suddenly unraveling. In the Middle East, in Indochina, the Mediterranean, and everywhere in the world, the United States seems to be losing ground. We're losing in diplomacy. Our allies are angry and fragmenting. We're losing everywhere in the world. Why? Why is the United States the whipping boy of all of the rest of the world? Why does everything go sour for the United States? Is there any sense to it all? If you write for the current number of the Plain Truth, you're going to find some references to prophecy. Because, you see, we believe, and we believe we can prove to anyone whose mind is open, that the United States is identified in the pages of Bible prophecy. And that there are blessings for obedience to God, and that there are curses for disobedience to God. It's just that simple. That Almighty God does exist. Oh, I know, people can argue about atheism, even in the midst of a world in absolute agony, a world of the combined pressures of a population explosion, of the voracious attack by a greedy, never-satisfied development, as they call it, which is a very poor word to use for the rape of the earth, but the developed countries with their incredibly complex technologies devouring the non-renewable resources of this earth at a prodigious rate, defouling our own environment unbelievably as we do so. Weather in turmoil, an unbelievable upset in weather, a return of drought cycles, a cooling of the entirety of the atmosphere, longer wet, flooded springs, horrible damage to livestock and to crops, the economy in turmoil, joblessness bigger now than any time since World War II. I mean, where does it end? Now, I'm going to get some hate mail. Somebody's going to tell me with true stentorian Senator Claghorn, I would say, political indifference, Garner Ted, you sound like a doomsday prophet. Why don't you start talking about what's right about America? May I say to you all, let us talk about what's right about America. Okay, let's do. The Coulee Dam, the Grand Canyon, Kansas wheat fields, Mount Rushmore, the Rocky Mountains, trout streams, snow-capped mountains, purple plains, from sea to shining sea. There you go. That's right with America. You better believe it. Right down to the bottom of your last year's tennis shoes. Our real estate's wonderful. Our climate, with the exception of some disasters here and there, is basically wonderful. We've got deeper topsoil and better humus than any other place on the face of the earth, and if they had a little bit of what we've got in Iowa somewhere in Chad, they'd build a fence around it and make it into a national park. Now, how much more do you want to talk about what's right about America? Every time somebody gets all tear-filled and wants to cut a hole in the flag and wear it around like a poncho and shaking an old beat-up flagstaff in the air, or maybe walking with a lurch behind a drum and a fife with a bloody band-aid around his head and make patriotic noises, he talks about the mountains and the valleys and the fields of golden grain, but he sure doesn't talk about the 20-story walk-up brownstone apartments that litter Manhattan Island. He doesn't talk about the ghettos of Detroit or Kansas City or St. Louis or Chicago. He doesn't talk about the barrios or the ghettos where the underprivileged, the impoverished, the uneducated, the illiterate are forced to live in squalid conditions that are nightmarish with their kids being nibbled on by rats. He doesn't talk about chicanery in government or about unemployment or about a stagnated economy and the inefficiency or inability of government because of the squabbling and the fighting of our two-party system to try to repair the frayed damage of both of them that looked somewhat like a moth-eaten frayed old overcoat pulled out of last year's trash can with about 37 hopefuls, or is it 47? I don't know. I haven't counted since yesterday, standing in the wings wanting to be president. When you talk about what's good about America, you got to talk about what's beautiful about America. Don't stray too far off the road. You start seeing the beer cans under the bushes that look so pretty from a distance. Sure, it's beautiful arriving to Los Angeles in a jet at night and seeing nothing but the lights. But walk around the alleys, go over to Watts, look at the barrios and the ghettos during the day. Now, I'll probably get a few letters telling me, what are you talking about all this bad news for? Listen, my problem is I read the newspapers. That's my problem. Now, the minute the newspapers start reporting some good news to me, good weather, good relations with allies, big, tremendous good news for the United States in Southeast Asia, good news for the United States in government, good news. Boy, I'll give you some. I'll tell you what, I'll give you just the greatest news they're going to pass on to me, because my news sources are the same as yours. Maybe we have a few more in the sense we have a worldwide news gathering bureau that includes all the major wire services, all the major foreign publications, and hundreds of people who can translate them. That's why we're able to be like a watchman looking at world conditions, a watchman for you to tell you exactly what is going on and help you get a handle on the seeming randomness, the kaleidoscopic patchwork of events that doesn't seem to make sense, and to put it in proper perspective, which I like to call the overview of world events in the light of Bible prophecy. I say it seems the American people in the United States are under some strange kind of a curse. And when I look in the Bible and it says, cursed will you be in the city, and cursed will you be in the field, cursed will be your basket and your store, that's your national natural reserves. That includes even the non-renewable resources, but it includes our cattle and our wheat and our corn and barley and soybeans. Cursed will be the fruit of your body. Why all those curses pronounced in the Bible? Well, it just says it's natural, it's cause and effect. It's hazards versus the benefits. It's punishment and rewards. It's obey and be blessed, disobey and be cursed. You know, you don't live on this earth without becoming aware of natural law. No matter whether you think Newton invented it or not, because he was sitting under the tree that day the apple fell, he did not invent it, and science did not invent a single law. Now, science may be able to first postulate and then theorize, and finally, based upon sufficient data, come up with the idea that a certain thing is called a law. Then the guy who discovered the idea, or first postulated that such and such might be so, whether you're talking of gravity or inertia or what, maybe it is then given his name. So it's called like the Van Allen belt, for example, which protects the earth, apparently. All right. But science doesn't invent those laws. Science merely gives us a handle to them, puts a name on them. What keeps you walking on the earth when you weigh yourself? You're merely weighing the pulling force of the gravitational field of this earth at its core as it attracts bodies of certain density to itself. The only reason our oceans are held here and they don't go spinning off into space is because of that inexorable law called gravity. We're all bound to the earth by gravity. What you don't know is that that is not a, quote, physical, end quote, law. What in the world is physical about it? You like to isolate things from spiritual and physical and like to say that spiritual is more like the hobby. It's more like what people would like to believe. It's the Betty Bye stories. The spiritual, well, that's in the realm of fanciful tales told by Hebrew mothers who wanted to keep their kids quiet when they said, Mother, who made the moon? God did, son. Shut up. So that's the end of the conversation, end of story. Then over a period of time, we got some kind of national sources. Our, you know, the people in Vietnam do too. And so we have our proud Judeo-Christian ethic. And we have all these notions about there being a Garden of Eden and a Daniel in the lion's den and a guy named Samson who pulled a building in on himself. We've got old Absalom hanging in the tree. We got the fiery foxes and all that stuff. That's part of our tradition. So there's still a lot of ignorant folk, some of the liberated freethinkers would have you believe, who exist here and there around the back alleys of some of the southeastern parts of the United States in their little clapboard unpainted churches with a steeple on top, who still believe there is a God, who still believe the Bible is the Word of God, who still believe that there is a living God who has the power to interfere directly in an individual human life. But these are just ignorant folk who don't know any better. This is the way some of the intellectuals would put them down. Those same intellectuals have never really stopped to analyze their own beliefs to the point of trying to justify law without a lawgiver, force and energy without a sustainer, design without a designer, all of the incredible interplay, even to the point of symbiotic relationships between several different types of living organisms, animal and plant, two different animals, three different animals, two different types of plants, like a lichen, and to really define how in the world that could have gotten started, and in spite of the fact people like to make fun of the age-old question, which came first, the chicken and the egg, there isn't a living or a dead scientist who has ever been able to answer it satisfactorily. There are laws, and they work. They work upon you, whether you're aware of them or not. You don't need to be aware of gravity to jump out of a building and get killed. It's there. It's inexorable. It's going to wallop you when you hit the bottom. Inertia will. Why don't we then understand that as a nation, we have been given the challenge and the commission to live at peace with ourselves, to show the rest of the world the way to live at peace, to be exponents of peace and exporters of peace, to export peace to the world, not at the point of a gun. But because if one nation, would obey that Creator God who does exist and who lives, and who has a purpose and a program in mind for His human creation, and we human beings on this earth have a great purpose to fulfill, if there were just one people who would obey that God, He said, if you will keep the commandments of the Eternal your God, all people of the earth will see you are called by the name of the Eternal and will be afraid of you, and the Eternal will make you plenteous in goods and the fruit of your body, the fruit of your cattle, the fruit of your ground. He will open to you His good treasure, the heaven to give the rain to the land in due season. He will bless everything your hand does. You will lend unto many nations and you will not borrow. And the Eternal will make you the head and not the tail. And you will be above only, and you will not be beneath, if you will listen to the commandments of God. That's Deuteronomy 28, verses 9 through about verse 13. You can read the whole chapter. It's quite educating. Now that sounds like some of the blessings we used to have. But they're being stripped away from us. That's why I say we're under a strange curse. Vietnam is certainly a catalyst. You take a look at what is happening now, and you can scarcely believe your eyes. In World War I, 53,402 American servicemen were killed in action. In Vietnam, the toll was 45,940. Awfully close, wasn't it? Just barely under 50,000. 53,402 in World War I. Unbelievable. In World War II, we lost 291,550. For the Korean War, 33,629. Vietnam surpassed it by a wide margin. World War I had 204,002 wounded. World War II, 670,000. The Korean War, 103,000. Vietnam, 303,000. World War I cost in billions 25.7. World War II cost 341 billion. The Korean War cost $54 billion, and Vietnam cost us $170 billion. In World War II, we dumped 2,057,244 tons of bombs on those cities in Europe, and you well remember the devastation you've seen in newsreels and motion picture footage since. In the Korean War, we dumped 635,000 tons, barely over a half million. Where it was over 2.5 million, remember, in World War II. In the Indochina War, our B-52s and other bombers dumped 7,100,000 tons. Way more than double, actually more than triple, the tonnage of bombs we unleashed upon Europe in World War II. Upon all enemies, Japan and Italy, all the rest combined. The length and involvement. World War I was 1 year and 7 months. World War II, 3 years and 8 months. The Korean War went 3 years and 1 month. Vietnam lasted 12 solid years. And yet today, everything we sought to prevent has happened. It's unbelievable. In the current number, The Plain Truth, there is article after article analyzing, appraising, assessing this exact situation. For example, in this current number, we have an article how U.S. policy is collapsing around the world and Indochina's agony, how men and billions have been spent in vain. There's an interview with Gideon Hausner, who was prosecuting attorney in the Eichmann trial. The interview was gained by my son Mark just after the collapse of the Kissinger talks over there, and he is asked about the collapse of those talks and about the chances for peace in the Middle East. And there's an article from our European correspondents, Charles Hunting and David Ord, who covered the Middle Eastern peace talks and why they failed in the current number. The incredible human potential, the missing dimension in knowledge. What is our ultimate goal? A deep look into mankind's destiny, That's in the current number of The Plain Truth. Doomsday Revisited. Scientific consensus is pointing mankind toward doomsday, and that's what most serious scientists seem to think is going to happen. But believe it or not, Bible prophets talk about a world after this alleged doomsday, which will survive in the kind of a world it's going to be. And, you know, some people, too, on the area of food talk about how the oceans are going to feed the world and how what they call mariculture, cultivating the oceans, is going to lead the way. Associate Editor Charles Vinson reports on that in the current number. The unexpected success of the Communist Spring Offensive has accomplished in a few short weeks most of what 50,000 American lives and 170 billion sought to stave off for 10 solid years. That article on Indochina's agony in the current number of The Plain Truth. Circulation now 3,064,896 of the current number, and that's all absolutely free of charge. We've managed to fight inflation in The Plain Truth by going from the slick magazine, 52 pages full color, down to a tabloid with newsprint coming out twice as often with twice the impact. Here's the article on U.S. foreign policy collapsing around the world, World Watch, from Gene Hogberg, Shattered Pride Before the Fall, showing how we have been jarred by so many foreign policy failures in so short a period of time. And by the way, there is also the article on how Portugal shakes NATO credibility, and an article, a little bit of a biography, of the late ruler King Faisal and what may be expected in the future as a result of his brother taking over the throne there. Everything I've been saying on this program today, by the way, I have covered in a Speaks Out column in the current number of The Plain Truth, including all these statistics I gave on America's wars, battle deaths, wounded in action, the cost of the war in billions, U.S. bombing in tonnages, the length of U.S. involvement in major wars, and how it was all for nothing and how dramatically it changed the American people. That's in the current number, too. This article shows how Americans can understand how to fight to survive, how to fight to preserve democracy, that we have proved our willingness to do that, to fight to destroy an enemy, to fight to make it safe for free people to live in the world, but to fight to lean on the enemy, to fight an enemy to force him to a conference table, to commit troops piecemeal to battle, fight for real estate you know your own leaders are going to abandon tomorrow, fight as an extension of your government's foreign policy? Americans don't know how to do that. We didn't know how to do it in Korea. We didn't know how to do it in Vietnam. The lessons we should have learned in Korea and didn't, and the lessons we ought to learn from Vietnam and probably won't, are in this current number of The Plain Truth. Even now, as we look at the death throes of Vietnam, as we read of the failure of Mr. Kissinger's shuttle diplomacy in the Middle East, you need answers to these questions. What will happen in the Middle East? Is a new war about ready to break out there? How do you view American attempts to police the entirety of the world in the face of the debacle of South Vietnam? Is increasing American isolationism going to mean the United States will no longer attempt any role at influencing peace in the rest of the world? What about the growing might of the trading complex of Japan? What about Soviet and Chinese detente? What about in-depth articles concerning the European common market, our own economic problems? Problems of the growing cancer of crime are discussed, for example, in a recent edition of The Plain Truth, and the dwindling strength economically and militarily of Britain and the United States, and what, if anything, Bible prophecy says about all of this. The Plain Truth, free of charge, no one is going to call on you, there's no bill to follow, but plain, common sense, straight from the shoulder articles you need, and there is no obligation.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.